This recording is produced from Open Reel Tapes, originally recorded for Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus, in 1973. This program forms part of the Langara College Real History Project, which restores and preserves British Columbia's oral history. This project is funded in part by the British Columbia 2000 Millennium Arts and Heritage Fund, in partnership with the Vancouver Public Library and Langara College. Copyright for this product is held by Langara College. It may not be reproduced in whole or in part, in any form, without permission from the copyright holder. The title of this recording is Reminiscences of Mrs. Scott Graham. The interviewer is Morrig McLaughlin. The interviewee is Mrs. Scott Graham. The audience consists of British Columbia history students at Vancouver Community College, Langara Campus.
Mrs. Graham, we're very pleased to have you at Vancouver City College today. Some students are interested in finding out about your experiences as the daughter of a Methodist missionary. They've been doing some research work on Indians in the Valley and on the work of missionaries in the Valley. So it's very good of you to come and talk to us.
Thank you. My father's missionary work was really in the North.
Yeah.
And he came out in 1903.
From where?
From Ontario. Originally from England, but yeah. From Ontario. And he went to Kitimat in 1893. There was, of course, nothing there but a village. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't born there, but I was born in Port Simpson because we had a mission hospital there. But I don't want this to be all about myself. This is
coming
after that.
No,
and the boats, as you know, came in periodically. 1 month they'd come in maybe on a Tuesday, and then they'd skip maybe a month, and you just took your chances. Well, anyway, I was born in Port Simpson, and the boat this time, of course, came in early. They didn't expect it in for 6 weeks, but it came in 3. So, and it only went so far. But they had to take it because they didn't know when another boat might come. And we went down the Douglas, to the Douglas Channel, and from there they dumped us off. Me, 3 weeks old. And we went then up the channel to Kitimat in an Indian canoe.
Three weeks old.
Yeah. I can't remember how long it took, but it was just a big Indian canoe.
Yeah.
So we lived there till I was 6. And the language I learned before English. I talked nothing but Quagwilf.
Now, what language would you be?
Now, we call it Quagwilf. I don't know what they have a different name for it now. Quagwilf or something like that. But the Indians, I know, called it Quagwilf.
Yeah.
With a oof at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Then
What do you remember about it?
Pardon?
What do you remember about it? But when you were
very young?
Before six. Well, I remember about that. I remember that's a very great trial to my mother because I would run away all the time. But I can remember one incident. There was an old woman, she must have been at that time 80 or more, who smoked a pipe. And it was difficult to get matches, you see. So I was naughty enough to get the matches by hook or by crook. And for the matches, she would give me dried salmon, which she would pull out of her dress, and I would eat it. Heaven knows what was on it. But I ate it anyway. Oh, and I can remember the girls' home there that my father built. And it started in the school, residential school, started in my mother's home by 12 students. And she was very young at that time and never done anything in her life. But she was a fantastic missionary's wife. I mean, she played the organ, she taught, and
Was she from Ontario, too?
She was from Ontario.
Born in Ontario?
She was born in Ontario. My father was born in England.
Did you have, when you were quite young, did you have friends? Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a brother. Mm-hmm.
Well, this older brother.
This older brother.
Would have been, what, 10 or 11 before you came, before you left there? If you were sick.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you play with Indians?
Oh, always. That's how I learned the language.
Mm-hmm.
We went east when I was 4 and a half, and I talked nothing but Indian all the time. And my mother and father and brother went to England, and they left me with my grandmother. And I think I was such a terrible youngster, they decided to leave me in Ontario. And but when I would... wouldn't want them to know anything, see what I wanted, or didn't like them or something, I would talk in Indian to my mother.
To your family. Yes.
Which annoyed my Eastern relatives greatly.
It must have been really incomprehensible
to
them.
Oh, yes. Okay. They just couldn't understand it.
Yeah. Well, who could you talk English to there, except your parents?
Well, they were... Later on, there was the trader's family. Now, he was white. His wife was Indian. Later, one of his daughters' husband was the chief at Kitimat Star. But his name was Robinson. This Mr. Robinson was a fantastic man. He was a tremendous chess player. And he could play chess. Just traveling up and down the boat, you know, with blindfold. He had a beard to here. I don't remember that.
Now, did your grandson go to potential school in England? Yeah. Where's the Robinson?
Yes, what was it?
Bill
Robinson's the minister. Oh, isn't that stupid?
It would be related.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Great grandson.
You say
he spoke
Indian. Is
this
Kitimat dialect?
No, this is Quagwell. It's Kitimat dialect. You see, Kitimat and Simshian started at Hartley Bay. Yes, more or less. Mm-hmm. And the Kitimat language, when the Bellabellas could understand the Kitimat.
In this residential school, did your mother teach the children in their own language, or?
Oh, no.
No, she taught them in English.
Mm-hmm.
So they were...
This is in the north. I just brought this for, thought it might be interesting. My father ran the first of them newspaper in the, it was first press in the north. And it's only this big, I guess.
A hand press.
A hand press.
Wow.
It's now at the university. And so he printed on this hand press this little paper called Nanaqua, It's Dawn of the Northwest Coast.
No.
And he, it's been invaluable.
This is the first issue, isn't
it? No, this isn't the first issue. The first issue was in 1898, 1889, I think.
When did
1898,
yeah.
I think.
That would have been just 2 years before. Yeah. Number 10.
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3, I think he tried to get out 3 issues a year. But since that time, I have been called on to births, marriages, and deaths to get the pension.
And you found the information here.
And I even found my own. I tried for a year to get my birth certificate.
Well,
I wasn't registered.
For goodness
And anything I took, they tell me not to send to Victoria. They get more confused than ever. So one day we happened to be a friend of mine. We happened to look through one of these. She said, "Why, Edith, here's your birth right here. I sent it to Victoria and got my certificate the next day."
Uh-huh.
As long as it was in print.
Yes, I see.
Because everybody... I knew had died.
Yes.
That had been in the north.
So here was your father helping you from the past.
That's true. But it was. Well, we printed this right up to 19. 07, I think, was the last.
Now, this is the year he left, is it? He left Kitimat in 1906.
No, in 6.
In 1906.
Then he went to Port Simpson.
Oh, and then he went to Port Simpson, so he kept the paper going.
Yes, for a couple of years.
And then in 1907?
We remained in Port Simpson till 1914, when he came south and was made principal of Kokolitsa Residential School.
Yeah,
and then, and this is, that was in 1914.
Now, is there anything anybody wants to ask about Port Simpson before we get into Kokolitsa?
I don't exactly
know where it is. No, it's 35 miles north of Prince Rupert.
Mm-hmm.
It was the last port of call before you hit Alaska.
And you would be working with Tsimshian Indians there,
yeah,
right?
They were Tsimshian Indians.
Now, what about the language difference?
It's totally different. I forgot them.
Oh, and did you learn the Tsimshian language?
No.
No.
Well, few words. I could say the Lord's Prayer part of it. We knew God of the Mahaga through the Shimnawan. That's about all I can remember.
When you went there, who was the Methodist who preceded?
No.
It seems to me that, from my reading, there was quite a rivalry between Portland and
Oh, yes. In the Metcalfe USA.
In Alaska.
In Alaska. Well, that was Duncan.
Yes. Yes.
William Duncan left.
Yeah.
He, a lot of people don't approve of Mr. Duncan, but
he was very controversial, wasn't he?
He was very, but I certainly did approve of his methods, and those methods are being carried out today. Where industry and things should be put on the villages.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Indians should be self-sustaining.
And they should be self-sustaining.
Was he a layman?
No. He was Anglican. And he was he lay?
I think he was lay. I think that wasn't that part of the difficulty.
Reverend,
but he was out with the Church Missionary Society, and then when they sent a bishop out to be in charge of the whole diocese when the conflict occurred.
And he didn't approve of giving Indians communion.
Oh, did he not?
No.
I didn't realize that. Why not?
Well, because it was firewood.
Oh, I see.
He was encouraging his drink.
Yeah.
And he didn't, and that was one of the big reasons.
That was
part of the controversy.
Mm-hmm.
But
I hadn't realized that. I thought he had refused to accept the authority of the bishop.
Well, he did too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this was one of the.
In 1907, wasn't that when the land claim issue had arisen, and he was consulted by the government? Duncan was consulted. Perhaps it was in earlier times. We can look that up. Mm-hmm. Though, let's ask you
Thomas
about things that you can. Pardon?
Thomas Crosby was before.
You would have met Thomas Crosby.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of his daughters is still living, I think.
Is that right?
She was a couple of years ago.
And
Grace.
Grace? And
Grace Crosby.
She's not married then, so she's still Crosby.
Yes, but she's still Crosby.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And
Church's boat, the mission boat.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The Thomas Crosby.
One of them, Thomas Crosby.
There was more than one boat called Thomas Crosby?
Three.
Three? Oh,
I believe there were. And,
in succession? Were they one replacing the other, or were they all running
it? No, they weren't running. No.
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 No, one after
succession.
The other.
I think there were three called Thomas Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And they.
We haven't that on tape. Your father's name?
Rayleigh.
Rayleigh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
George Rayleigh, wasn't it? Reverend George Rayleigh.
George H. Pardon?
Middle name.
Henry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book called
that? Well, there was, but as a matter of fact, I came across the dedication last night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The boats were built by the Methodist Church in order to
this, of course, was
work.
United Church.
And, well, then it became United Church.
Film strip on
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
didn't they have the boats
like
before Union?
Yes.
Yeah. So it would be Methodist at that point.
It was Methodist at that point. And I have, they have one of the first ones that was built was under a Captain Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a lay missionary, too. And it went down between Prince Rupert and Queen Charles Islands. And the only thing that was saved was a chair. Must have floated ashore or something. And it was called Udell.
Oh.
And I have the plate. I had the chair, too. So I moved. It's in one of those pictures. Yes. But it's in one of the pictures. Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is Yolanda. I was canceling interviews for your groups this week. But, I'm sorry if I didn't explain it. Oh, I see. Oh, so you knew where you were going. Well, that's fine then. Well, perhaps we could get to Coquelicza now, because we're curious about Coquelicza.
Oh, if I'd known that, I would have brought the dates with me.
Oh, it doesn't matter about the dates.
I had the home.
What about the Indians that your father was working with when at Coquelicza? He was principal of the school.
Of the school.
So that was, so he was no longer, he was a missionary, and I suppose he would be.
It was under the Methodist Church at that time.
Mm-hmm.
When he came south, then of course in 1920.
Well, as principal, did this mean that he still did the ordinary work of a missionary? Did he carry on church services, or?
Oh, yeah, in the school.
In the school.
And also at Schuylkill.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
Now, which reserve is that? Is that the one on along the Vedders?
No.
No?
No, that is down near the village of Sardis.
Ah, yeah, I see.
And that is, and Chief Sapath lived, he was chief of that.
Yeah.
Group that area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, that's on the river
was another,
road, isn't it? And was his place right there on the river road?
It was
past, you go down Knight Road inside.
Yeah, but he lived on Knight Road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think Anne had
toward
seen the
end
where his home was.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, right at the end.
And he had rather a large family. They were inclined to die of TB, I think. That time. But Alice was a very lovely girl and a very clever girl. And then there was Harvey.
Now, Alice is the one in the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Was she the eldest girl?
No. And in that photograph, the chief is telling them a story.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Wow.
And about that. Has he told him there? Yes, telling him a story about that totem.
Now, that totem, where did the totem come from?
From my father's collection.
But this is not something familiar to Chief Sapath, is it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Is that?
Yes. Isn't that interesting? I wonder where that was in your father's collection.
Yes, that's definitely Salish. I don't know.
I wonder if Sapath himself carved it. Be interesting to know.
No,
he wouldn't have.
No.
He wouldn't have.
No.
You know that for sure. He didn't do any carving.
I don't think so.
I see. What can you tell us about him?
Well, he was a very charming man, I would say. A real gentleman.
Yeah.
He was delightful to talk to. Mm-hmm. And often my mother entertained him in the house. And his, particularly Alice, was like her father. Mm-hmm. She was a very, very charming girl. And quite a clever girl.
Hmm.
She went, I think, on up to high school.
Mm-hmm.
Was Chief
Sapath
very well educated?
No, self-taught probably. I think he probably, he was old.
Yeah.
Seemed to me old when we went to this artist.
When was he born, Anne? He was born about 1848 or something, wasn't he?
He wouldn't have the opportunity. All he'd glean, as far as education was concerned, I think, would be from the missionaries.
And
oh yes,
intelligent.
He was very intelligent.
Very intelligent.
Oh yes.
What he was tribe? Now he was chief of this particular group on the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have authority over a larger group of Indians, or?
I don't think so. There were 2-3 chiefs up there.
Oh.
There was a chief at Culver Slade.
What was his name? There were Indians at Culver Slade.
Oh, yes, in and around there, and the better. They ran up. There was a little church up there,
yes,
too.
I know where the
you know where the little church
is, yeah.
is along
yeah.
the valley?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my father used to hold services there once a month.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, would the Indians from Culver's Lake would come to that?
They would come to that.
Were they separate groups? Were they? Was it a separate, or was the chief at Culver's Lake chief of all those Indians?
They were, I'm trying to think of the name.
See, we've always heard this story that Indians didn't go to Culver's Lake, that there was they wouldn't even go to the lake. But I've heard this before, that there were Indians at Culver's Lake.
Well, when I speak of Culver's Lake, I don't mean just the lake
camping
itself.
Right on the lake shore.
No,
they didn't camp there.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, all that area, when I was young, was called Culver's Lake area.
So would they camp along the, say, Swelter Creek?
Yeah.
Coming out of the lake in that
coming
area,
out in that area
there.
There
was the Columbia Valley. Were there Indians up there? That was so remote, I don't suppose you'd even know, anyway.
I don't know. I know people who lived up the Columbia Valley.
Did you?
By the name of Teske and
Martin.
George Martin.
Yeah. Well, that's much later, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's
This is not when you first went as a child.
No. And when I first went to Chilliwack, there was Sardis. There wasn't a thing that caught his life. Not a thing.
No. How did you get up there? Pretty horrendous road, wasn't it?
By horse and buggy.
Mm-hmm. You remember Devil's Corner? I can remember that.
Then I've got a scar. Right there. And I took a header off a bicycle. Mm. This is the Devil's Corner. And needless to say, I was not supposed to be there.
Oh, I see.
So that's the kind of a child I was. Very good.
What's about the hereditary
chief
that you know?
Oh, dear, that I can't tell. No.
What about the language he spoke? He spoke English.
He's Salish.
Yeah,
it would be.
Was it? Yeah.
You just called the Indian language there Salish.
They're the Salish, belong to the Salish tribe, don't
That's
they?
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think he spoke any other language?
No.
Did he ever tell you were talking about him telling a story?
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever tell you any other story? You remember? You said he came into your home.
Well, you see, I really was there very little.
Oh, I see.
As a matter of fact, my mother thought it would be very marvelous when we came south that I would go to an all-white school and play with all-white children.
So you were sent away to school.
I lasted 6 months because my grammar became very bad. I never heard in my life the word ain't. Never.
Well, where were you going? To Sardis School?
I went to Sardis School.
The same one as the Pearsons and all these people
Movies
went to.
Yes, but they weren't going when I went.
No.
They were older. And she hasn't came yet. And, you know, she hasn't went yet. And I came home one day and asked my mother where Pa was. That did it. I sat at the table for an hour. That was my last day at school. So I was immediately sent down to Fleming College, my sister, which was a Methodist school.
Yeah, Mr. Neffel was principal there for a while.
Yes.
Did you know him?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Dr. Sanford was principal when I met.
I see.
But,
so this would be when, about 1915 or 16 or so?
16.
Mm. So, yeah. I see. So you
15.
wouldn't
I stayed home for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And, I really didn't.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see a potlatch in Chilliwack?
Not exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Down at the hop yards, we saw them playing Kashan and Lahel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same as Button Button, who's got the button, you know, that time.
Mm-hmm.
They're at Bones.
That's
Lahel.
Yeah.
Kashan is where they have it's bone, but it has markings on.
Mm-hmm.
And they
Hide it
behind the back, and they pass it from one to the other to the back. That was interesting.
Yeah, they still play it.
Seems to me they had one up at, I'm just surmising, up at the reservation near the Better. Mm-hmm. There. And that's it. I've been trying to think of that name. I know it so well, too.
The name of the reserve?
Yes, the name of the reserve. But the Commodores, the Wheelicks, and they were a big family who lived up there.
And the Commodores were there, too?
The Commodores lived up in that area.
Because there were Commodores over at the foot of the of Yonge Street. Near on the Fraser when I was growing up, but it would be a branch of the family, I expect.
Could be, yes. But I know they were there. And this family now moved to Tulalip?
Oh, yes. Down in Washington.
They were down in Washington. But I think they still are. Did you ever person that could give you maybe a little history of around there would be a Mrs. Kelly.
Mrs. Kelly?
No, Delvina Kelly. And her husband is comes from that area near Claiborne. Or make the Claiborne brick, you know. And he has a barber shop there.
Now that's Ed Kelly's parents. Ed Kelly's parents you're talking about.
Yeah, who lived down on.
The man with the barber shop, I know who you mean.
Oh, yes, Ed Kelly. Well, his wife is Delvina Howard.
Oh, well.
And she, I think, lived at one time at Langley. Before she, but she was very young when she came to Coquelicot.
And she was at Coquelicot.
Oh, she's a charming girl.
Yeah.
I have,
this is the Kelly I thought you were talking to, but it turned out to be a different Kelly.
We have a Georgina Kelly in the college. Now, she's related somehow or other, but Mike Kelly is her uncle. But we want to get back, yes, it was Mike Kelly, but we want to get back a generation. I don't know what Mr. Kelly in the barbershop, what his first name is. His son
Ed.
Is Ed. Oh, and he's Ed, too.
Ed, yeah.
I see.
Well, his son was...
administrator for the Indian Commonwealth.
Yes, he was with the Mounted Police at one
That's
time.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the same Ed Kelly. Yeah. So...
But they both went to Coquelicot.
Both Kelly, Mr. and Mrs. Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we should be able to contact them, I think, and perhaps find out more. Yeah, that would be a good lead. I thought Mr. Malloy, too.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because he's older, would be able to give us information, but we haven't been able to contact him.
The Muscles?
Yeah, the Muscles. And I taught Billy Muscle. We'll have to get in touch with them again, too. But they were on a different reserve altogether. They were way over at the Tin Landing, so I just didn't know whether they would know that much. They even seem to speak different languages, you know. When we were up this summer, Mr. Malway had some difficulty. He didn't have difficulty, but he said they had someone there from the other reserve, from the same reserve that the Muscles come from, and Mr. Malway was telling Dr. Suttles that man really didn't know how to speak properly. There were differences in the language, even.
Well, you see, the Muskim and the Capilano, I don't think they speak the same language. But the Muskim and the Nymal still understand each other.
I see. We've been talking to Eloise Street.
Oh, yes.
And we wondered what you could tell us about Eloise. She would be older than you quite a bit.
Yes.
Do you remember
Eloise,
her?
I've been on my way out. I've been trying to think for her last name. I think it's Harold.
Harry.
I haven't seen her for quite some time. But she was very interested in Peace of Path. And she used to bring my father up.
Did she?
Quite often, yes. Now, she of course, she was born up. Was she born up in Chilliwack?
I think so.
Yes. There was quite a family of Street.
Her mother was a Street. No. Her mother was a White. Yeah.
Yes, her mother,
now,
yes.
Now, you would know Dr. White.
Oh, yes. And... now, another person that she might know certainly a lot about Elby would be, now she's either a cousin or a niece, and that is Mrs. Bob Muir.
Yeah. Dan's already talked to her.
Oh, you already talked to her?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
What have you heard about with the Taft poem?
Well, not very much, I must confess. I'm afraid I'm not very good.
No, no, that's all right. We just are curious.
Yeah, I've been away from so long, you know. Now, I had those poems.
Mm-hmm. Who gave them to you?
I think Eloise gave them to Dad.
I see. Yeah,
I think
that would be when they were in the mimeograph form.
Yes, the mimeograph form. But
when did your father die?
In 58.
Oh, I see, that late.
He probably, a lot of stuff went over to...
Mm-hmm. Your father never spoke to you about the poems. He never mentioned them to you. You don't recall him saying anything about them?
No, I really don't. Mm-hmm. I know he had them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're surrounded with these things, you think, oh, but someday I'll look at them, you know, and someday I'll look at them, and you don't grasp things very well. Because I said, oh, well, tomorrow I can read them.
Do you have any other questions, then?
No.
Perhaps some people would like, I think it would be interesting to find out something about Kokolitsa. What do you remember of life at Kokolitsa?
Well, when we came, it was, there were about 100 students there, and,
How old were you then? Were you quite young?
Yes, I was just, when we left the North.
You said you left in 1914. 14, so you would have been, had it figured out.
12, 13.
Something like that,
And
old enough to remember quite well anyway, yeah.
And we just liked this heartily.
Oh, did
coming,
you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, why?
Coming into a place surrounded by mountains, dusty roads, horses we weren't used to, and people tearing up and down, you know, wasn't a highway then, but the road.
Now, this would be that Vedder Road. Right?
Yes.
It's called Vedder Road now.
Yes, but you go right past the school.
Yeah.
And I had never seen a house fly in my life. And there were thousands and millions when we arrived in July.
Interesting.
And we hated it. We were used to we lived as close to the sea as that wall, you see. Always on the open sea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was horrible, and my father had a very bad year with us all.
Mm-hmm.
At least my mother and myself.
And I suppose the area would still be quite heavily wooded there.
Oh, yes. Listen, there are no houses across the street or anything like that. Oh, dreadful place.
Did you live in the school?
No, well, we did for three weeks, and that's what pretty nearly ruined us all.
Mm-hmm.
I was... Oh, is this on tape?
Yes, yeah, but that doesn't matter. You can... you go ahead. Just relax. We'll take it over.
I nearly died with... flea bites. I ran a temperature of 104, and almost nearly that was the crown.
And you were right in the school.
And we were in the school.
But
the residence
was there.
That residence was built by the people themselves under the Reverend C.M. Tate.
Oh, that was early.
That was early.
Yeah.
I
we've
think
seen these buildings.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's...
Yeah, it's a beautiful house, that.
Yes, it is. I've been in it. And Galbraith are there.
Had you ever seen a building like that before? Have you something
Well, yes, because we used to come south once a year, maybe, you know. But to Victoria, that was the place where we went.
But they
Much
were building. They were building in the north.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You've seen the pictures of the sort of ones that went up.
Oh, yes, because the house that we lived in Port, the first house was burned,
mm-hmm.
the mission house,
mm-hmm.
at Port Simpson. It was made all of cedar.
Mm-hmm.
And it burnt 4 days before Christmas, and it burnt in 20 minutes.
Oh.
Just not a thing was saved.
But everybody got out.
We got, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can remember, because we were going to go for Christmas trees,
mm-hmm.
and my greatest ambition was to wear a pair of boys' boots. And somehow, I had on a pair of boys' boots, and this is all I had. I never wanted to see boys' boots again. So I lived in. But anyway, the school, the first school, of course, was burned, and it was down at the corner of Knight Road, just across from Pearson's store.
Oh, I didn't
in that
know
area
that.
There.
Mm. Yeah.
And then they built the red brick.
It was built on Wells' property, wasn't it? Didn't Wells buy this, or did they buy it? Did the Methodist Church buy it from them?
There were 200 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether they bought it or not,
mm-hmm.
or whether it was just appropriated by the government or the church.
It was the church.
It was the church
built it. And Wells, of course, was a very strong Methodist. I just always assumed he donated the land, but I don't know.
I don't, not to my knowledge.
No.
Mm-hmm. But then in 1923, the school began to grow.
Yeah.
I mean, the northern children and the people knew my father because he was superintendent of the district from the Board of Alaska down to Campbell River, of all the missions for a number of years, and also as chairman of the Marines. That's the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And more and more children were wanting to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And so the school, it was just outgrowing itself. So in 1923, they opened this school, the one that's there now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then half of it burned, you know.
I remember
that. Half of it burned. And they built on that
wing.
Mm-hmm. But it was a marvelous school. Then we had 225, 250 children.
And the Indian families would request.
Oh yes,
and
yes.
What sort of arrangements were made? Did the church provide for this? Or
we got the government. The government subsidized.
Okay.
They were the church buildings, but we got a grant from the government, and of I've just forgotten the amount per capita. And this was to run the school.
Mm-hmm.
But the farm, you see, was to provide the food, and then they had cattle. And we had a very fine strain of Jersey cattle, and but we found it was too rich for the children, so we had to get in Holstein. Jersey and Guernsey we had.
Yeah.
And then they after many, many plans and things, Ottawa decided to build the school. They took over then the buildings, but the church retained the lands. The church, I think, granted the government 10 acres for buildings. And then the Coquelites.
So any Indian child who came to Coquelites came really on a voluntary basis.
Oh, they were not forced.
No,
their parents really wanted them to come. I mean, there's an awful lot now, as said,
the damage that was done.
But Delvina Allard, or Delvina Kelly, said that if it hadn't been for Coquelites, she wouldn't be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I can just name dozens.
Another side of the picture that doesn't come out too much.
If I had really realized this, I would have brought to the now this Mrs. Kelly and Mrs. Smith, who is Ruth Castle, a year ago got up a reunion.
Mm-hmm.
It was the most fantastic thing that I've had
with
people.
Oh.
And they came from all over. Two or three a couple of teachers came from Ontario.
Uh-huh.
One came from California. And there were about 150 attended. They came from the north.
Yeah.
Well, Frank Calder was there.
Uh-huh.
And Senator Guy Williams. They both attended Coquelites.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Calder came as a little boy of about 5 or 6, the cutest thing you ever saw. I told him this. He just about died. And and They came from Queen Charlotte Islands, Mass of Skidiot, Kitimat, Port Simpson, Bella Bella, Namu, Bella Coola. And around the Fraser Valley, but not very many.
Mm-hmm.
And that is predominantly, you see, they go to mission school because it's predominantly a Catholic reservation.
Mm-hmm.
But they then, we, from the idea, well, I, the idea, of course, of the residential school was that they would learn trades.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they called
well,
industrial schools.
And but my father didn't like the name, so
oh,
he had it changed to residential. Mm-hmm. Oh yes,
see.
No, he had it changed. So they called them all residential schools after that, because he felt that industrial was more like a reformatory.
Oh, yeah.
Boys Industrial School in Westminster, and
mm-hmm.
Boys Industrial School in Vancouver Island, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It was more or less of a stigma.
I see.
And
the weight the word can carry.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Then, from, they already had taken high school, not at the school, but two or a few had gone into Chilliwack.
Mm-hmm.
I can name, do you know Bill Reed,
the
carver?
Sounds as though any Indian who's gone anywhere has gone to Coquelica.
And I
can
tell you that the heads of the till, of course, some of these people are getting quite old now.
Yeah.
Students, but practically all the bands were headed by
Coquelica graduates. And our Harvey Brooks here went to Coquelica too, the Indian counselor at the college.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. He went there in the late 30s, I think.
Yes, he would be in Dr. Scott's time.
Yeah, he was Dr. Scott's time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know him.
No. Where'd he come from?
Well, he was Tsimshian originally, but I think his parents died, and he was being looked after by an uncle who lived down in the Lower Mainland, missionary or someplace.
Oh.
And in the Depression, this man had so many problems looking after his family, and Harvey, he had gone off the reserves. But
mm-hmm.
he thought that he could look after Harvey in this way by sending him to Coquelica. Apparently
mm-hmm.
he had the right to go where his own family wouldn't. And it was a matter of providing for Harvey. So he put him in Coquelica.
And Brooks.
Yeah.
Did he come from Port Simpson?
Well, his family had originally, yes.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, and probably his father or uncle, had, because they were Brooks.
Yeah.
At Coquelica.
Ah, yes, well... I don't know, this is just what he told
mm-hmm.
me.
Oh, yes, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But this is some of the things they did at Coquelica. They had lectures, some extension lectures from the university,
mm-hmm.
and they had all the trades. They were taught farming, shoemaking, boat building, manual training, practically all the skills.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also taught carving,
mm-hmm.
basket weaving. Mm-hmm. Their own skills.
And who would teach them these
well,
things?
Dad got in, the women from the reserve who did do basket making would come in.
Yeah.
And they were taught that. He was, I would say he was 3 years ahead of his time.
Oh, yes.
These. Well, then when he retired.
Heather was just. Because the story we always get of the missionaries is they suppress the culture.
Oh, and, heavens.
This is very interesting. It's another part of the story, isn't it?
Oh, he just encouraged us. He taught us. And making their sweaters. And then, as far as the girls were concerned, they were taught sewing and. All household skills.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a lot go to high school.
And they would go into Chilliwack.
And they'd go to
there.
Mm-hmm.
So they were provided with an elementary education at Coquelica.
Through the entrance.
And then
mm-hmm.
when they had completed that, they could
mm-hmm.
go into the high school.
We were, I believe, before my father retired, thinking of taking first year high school at Coquelica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
why? Did he find the Indian children didn't do well in the town school?
Oh, they did well.
Oh, they did well.
Now, you see, these children only went, till they went to grade 8, they only went to school half a day.
Ah, yes. Yeah, they were working at crafts.
They were working at crafts or trades, whatever they had to do. But they accomplished almost as much as the white children did going full time. Because they had a study period at night.
So he just felt that he could do more for them if he had them at Coquelicot.
Yes, for that first year.
The children didn't have problems in the town school.
I don't think
so.
Mm-hmm. Ella Gladstone was one. Now, her sister graduated in 1914 and from Chilliwack High School. So they were going, and she taught school. She went to Norman, taught school. Now, she's the mother of Bill Reed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And an extremely clever woman. Mm-hmm. Her daughter is now got her Ph.D. and is teaching in London University, in England.
Mm-hmm.
And her whole family, her other son, Bob, is a commercial artist, has his own business in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one family.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can name several families mm-hmm. who, through the influence of Coquelicot,
mm-hmm.
have done extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are schools and schools, you know.
Yes, that's true.
My father's he was very far-sighted, and he wrote a brochure on for the government on handicrafts and the encouragement of handicrafts and so on and so forth, which wasn't taken up by the people at that time. But when he retired, he made up his mind that these grafts were coming back. So he went to Vancouver Island and he saw the women or encouraged them to make baskets and so on and so forth, and the men and them to carve totem poles, and which they did. Then all of a sudden he would get an onslaught of maybe 300 little totems like this. Dr. Raley, please sell these for me and send the money right away. We were living in Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And I have typed thousands and thousands of this totem pole is genuine Indian handicraft made by so on and so on and so forth. And you have to get 25 cents.
Oh.
So I saw a little basket the other day downtown.
Yeah.
And then the same with baskets. And of course, I'd be furious at this. Why are you sending the money with them right away? Wait till you dispose of the things. Oh, no. No, we must. They encourage them. And he lost money on this thing.
Oh, I'm sure he did.
Yes.
Yeah. Try and find out that.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. Yes, they sent him there. Well, those little baskets sell for 25 cents. Now, they weren't any bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
I saw in Lando's the other day, $6.
Mm-hmm.
The same basket.
I saw a basket. You saw the basket in the Salish Weavers. It was a little different style, but they were charging over $100, and my mother bought that same type of basket for old clothes.
I know.
When we were kids.
Mm-hmm. I have a beautiful cedar bark.
Mm-hmm.
I've given it. When the Alcan had some sort of a do up there, and my father, of course, he was invited to it because he had supplied them with a lot of names and so on and so forth. And so, of course, I went with him. Now, that was the year before he died. And the chief's wife presented me with a birch bark. And it must be this big round about that. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
I'm waiting. I'm holding out. I'll sell it someday. I think Art has his eye on another one I've got. Or two. I haven't much.
No.
Must say, no. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I've got quite a bit of material anyway, too. And I can. Now, here's a graduate. She's in her second year. Now, she came down. She comes from Prince Charles Island, Eleanor Gladstone. And she was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
She She was secretary to one of the trust companies here for quite a number of years.
Mm-hmm. But she had the opportunity. You know, if she hadn't had that opportunity,
and if she hadn't had that,
her life would have been very different.
At that time, the children were not made to go to school.
No.
Mm-hmm. They'd go off. If they wanted to go off getting Willikins, the youngsters went too. They went off trapping, they went too.
Well, this is what I find interesting, that the attendance was voluntary.
The attendance was voluntary. There were some children sent down who didn't have anybody to look after them.
And they may not have chosen themselves to go, but someone in the family did.
But they would only go to school maybe, some of those children, 4 or 5 months of the year, if that.
Mm-hmm.
But at Kokoritsu, they would.
Mm-hmm.
And they learned English very, very quickly, because we had some come who couldn't speak English at all.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly around your part of the wood, Bella Coola, some of those children didn't speak English, because they weren't exposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't. And they weren't the most progressive.
Your anthropologist grandson.
Yes, they weren't. Oh, yeah.
Over there.
they weren't as progressive, say. Yeah.
Well, we know exactly what the word means.
Yeah.
And there's no better word for it, is there?
The Nass River.
Yeah.
They were very keen. We had a lot of people from the Nass River.
Uh huh. So you'd notice the difference between.
I could spot a youngster when they'd come down. I could almost tell where he came from.
Mm.
What area?
Yeah. And you feel that some of these groups of Indians are adapted more readily to contact and to the white man's culture than others?
Certainly the Haida and Tsimshian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think they adapted pretty well.
Mm-hmm. No, but I was just asking about, you noticed differences between different groups of Indians. I was just asking.
Yes, I would say the Queen Charles Islands probably, although they were isolated too, but they had come in contact more with, and they were intermarried there quite a lot.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And the Tsimshians, they were very clever,
mm-hmm.
but and very, they didn't mix the Haidas and the Tsimshians.
No.
We had to be very careful even in dormitories at the school, even the little 6-year-olds. They would fight on sight.
Think.
Oh, yes. They even, in the later years, it just came right down with them.
Uh-huh.
You see?
Right.
Because they were the ones that were the fighters.
Yeah.
Well,
that's interesting.
Did you ever hear your father comment on the
potlatch? He never thought it was wicked.
Oh.
I never heard him say that. It was wicked. It
would be very hard for him to smell it in the
Yes.
And government line. It was really the Indian agents that suppressed not the church. Yeah.
In 1940 at Kitimat, they put on a potlatch for him.
Oh, they did.
Yes, fifty years.
Yeah.
An anniversary of 50 years. And they met him as they would have met him at 50 years. Previously,
mm-hmm.
with their canoes and their
mm-hmm.
whooping and howling and, you know, so on and so forth. Well, that first day, everything was done as it would have been done 50 years. I mean, they ate, he ate fish, he ate ulican grease and berries and so on and so forth. And then they put on the highest honor that can be bestowed on any chief or anything, and that was the eagle dance, which was eagle down dance, which I, for a whole year, was picking eagle down out of his clothes, and it was dreadful stuff. When he arrived off the boat, I thought he'd been in a snowstorm. His hat, Anyway, then. From then on, they graduated, it lasted 3 days till they became the banquet. The last night was put on just as we would put it on, and it was done practically by students who attended Coquitlam.
Oh, well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, loved it. And then when we were there in 58, the chief's wife, as we were guests of the Alcan people, but the chief's wife put on a luncheon for us. There must have been 10 in her home.
Mm-hmm.
And but she gave my father the opportunity to go over and see the village. And in about 1898, he brought up from Victoria not raspberries, but black currants, gooseberries, and red currants. And the house was built on the side of a hill, and he just planted these berry bushes there. Well, those berry bushes are still bearing. We brought down 3 shoots of black cuffed black currants. I sent one out to the university to their wonderful agricultural department, which killed it immediately. Sent one to a farmer, a gardener, and I kept one myself, and all I did to mine was just stick it in the ground.
And it's growing.
And it grew. And before the year I sold the house that summer, I got 2 jars of jam. Mm-hmm. Those still.
And collected one of the largest Northwest Coast collections of Indian art. What would motivate a Methodist missionary to...
He appreciated it.
I would assume a lot of missionaries would consider
it. Yeah, oh, they did. Thomas Crosby, William Duncan. Well, he recognized it as a form of art. And right away he started in collecting it. He sent, I don't know whether it's a couple of tons or something, to his brother in England. But some of it he had sent back. If you notice on TV, you also see the large house posts like this. They use the background with the bear. With the... Yeah, this one. Well, that went to England and came back. And that's a house post. Well, he carved himself. Yeah, you know, when he was young. Just watching the Indians. But the Kennemat people were not carvers. Not like the Haida. And they built canoes and they built house posts and things like that, but they weren't fine carvers. They're basket makers of certain types, cedar bark particularly.
When you were very young and you were getting out, do you remember, well, what kind of houses did you live in?
Here was the Chief Jesse's tribal house, you see.
The missionary came out was in Kennemat Village.
In Kennemat Village.
As opposed to the white
community. Mm-hmm. There was no white community. There were two families, the Andersons, and then there's another family there. But he was a lay missionary and taught school. And that is where his house was. It's where the golf course is right now in Kennemat. Yeah. The Alcan people have. Or it was to be where the site of a golf course, I presume it.
I don't
feel
that.
Isn't it?
I wasn't going
out there. Oh, it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Where? Yeah, Anderson's house. Then, of course, the mining people came in there. Mm-hmm. And, this is when we were there. The Steel and Dunn Mine attracted
What did you say Kitimat mean?
Daleks. It means that you push a boat out into that last that trickle against the side of a boat. And it's their name really is Weesup Daleks. And the Weesup means the water trickling over stone. But the Daleks means that laugh that you hear as you push a boat out of the water.
And this is the name that you should
use? I've christened it.
So yes. Who would decide on the name?
There was a girl by the name of Annie who worked with my mother, an Indian girl, and her name was Dolly. And so she wanted me to be called Dolly. Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about Salish names?
No.
You know what chief the past Salish name was?
I don't know anything about Salish, really, people.
Oh, no. Would you know anyone who would be able to tell us? Well, I suppose the Kellys would be the best to meet.
The Kellys?
Oh, if we could ever get in touch with him.
Yes.
I should think so. He lost his daughter this fall.
Oh, did he?
It was rather distressing to
him. Mm-hmm.
So we weren't able to. We didn't feel we wanted to approach him.
I'm trying to think of some other names up there. And you know, I met some of them when I was up at this reunion. This is a fantastic affair. I hadn't seen some of those people for 40 odd years, you know.
When was this last year?
Last October.
Mm-hmm.
And, some of them from the north I hadn't seen.
You know, I've always had the feeling that someone should write an extended history of Cocalypse, and this makes me more convinced than ever that it's something that should be done.
The students that went there, I have yet to hear one say that they didn't derive some benefit from it. Not only scholastically, but socially. Because some of the girls say, now they had a great opportunity, a lot of those girls, of meeting people, of which my father was great on ceremonial affairs, like planting trees, anybody who came to the Fraser up there, like the Willingdons, Mackenzie's group. He would not invite them. He would be asked if he would have them.
No.
Because they didn't know what to do with them. And so on.
I can believe that.
These children had a great opportunity of meeting these
Lord
people.
Lord Wellington, the Governor General of
Canada,
who
got a picture. And, yes, and they were mother, of course, they were all demanded on Monday to entertain at luncheon or to dinner or something like
that. And they would be lords from England.
Yeah.
And
it's been said that Lady Wellington was very snobbish in Ottawa.
In Sardis, how was she?
In Sardis, she was just a delight. We had four girls waiting on the table.
Yeah.
And there were, I think, I know I went home to her on account of the guides. And I think there were 16 at dinner. And we had these four girls all dressed in white waiting on the table. And when dinner was over, she asked that they all be brought in, and she was to shake hands with them, and how delighted she was. And the Beans, and the Mackenzies, and Victoria, and a lot of dignitaries, you know, which the children were exposed to. And they were used to meeting people. Far more than the average white child.
That's right. I was thinking of where I saw Lord Beans. In the, you know, in a crowd, and
yeah.
They brought us out of school all down to the city hall. That was my first year in school.
I can remember.
And he declared, he closed the show at school the next day. He declared a holiday in honor of his visit. So we thought he was great.
My one night, this is in Port Simpson, at 7 o'clock in the evening. Of course, it came over by wireless sort of thing. I don't know where, Bull Harbor or someplace. The Duke and Duchess of Connaught would be arriving in Port Simpson the next day, and would Mr. Rainey please see that they were entertained? Well, 7 o'clock at night, you can just imagine what one did to be ready for the next morning at 11 o'clock. Get decorations up, flags anywhere they could get them, and everything was done, I'm telling you. And mother had to entertain them at tea. And you just didn't go out and buy a cake at the Bonton or something like that. So I remember making hot biscuits and something
making
else. Making them herself. And then being ready to receive the Duchess. And which she did. But those were the type of things, you know. And the Indians were all gathered, and all the school children, and somebody went over in the morning and told them what the Duke and Duchess of Connaught were. Yes, he was then Governor General. Yes, Governor General of Canada. And I can remember I was very impressed with the Princess Patricia, because she wore pepper and salt stockings, woolen stockings, and she had the heels darned. I couldn't get over it. The princess having darned heels. And then she walked into our house, and her first remark, "Oh, these savages. And they have a piano." She sat down and played the piano. We hardly dared touch the keys for weeks. Yeah. But it was things like that. And at Coquelicot, so they were all, the children were exposed to things.
What
like
about
that.
The contract with the service community?
No. We tried not to.
Oh, you tried not to?
Yeah. We found it better. Well, particularly, after we left, they did. And then the row started between the mothers and the daughters and the boys. You know, there were some good-looking boys, but Indian boys, very good-looking. And rather than get into any, they were not allowed to mix. No. We, at times, they were invited to Coquelicot. Things, but children were never allowed.
So,
yes, but they put on programs such as Princess Chrysanthemum, HMS Pinafore, and numerous things like that. And traveled with it. They said their performance with HMS Pinafore was marvelous. I helped train them for that. That's why I'm boasting. But I broke many of rod off a chair while he was training them. They had beautiful voices. Just beautiful.
Then after you came back?
No. I just came for summer. Be a nuisance, valid. No. I learned a lot of wild ways at the Grammy College, too.